And your dad said you would be the one to do that. I had never preached in my life. I went down there and I told my wife on the way down, wonder what they're going to do with all the people that's going to be baptized. Well, I spoke on Matthew the 25th chapter, the parable of the 10 virgins. And I tell you, I had 10 pages of handwritten notes. And my wife didn't even get her songbook put up before I was extending the invitation. No one came forward. And as Connie said, she said, Steve, no one even understood it. It was just like that. Well, by the time the day is over with, you'll kind of wish that I had kept on that type of a path. But since then, I don't know if I've improved any as a preacher, but I definitely have increased in length. And when we talk about Sierra Leone, that's one of those things that are near and dear. The reason that it's a two-parter is because this passage of Scripture kind of brings out, and if you read through this passage, you look down at the bottom part and read, and you see, we have seen extraordinary or remarkable things today, depending upon your version that you use. But Sierra Leone, as I know, Brother Payton's father lived over there for 4 months. And by the way, good luck, Godspeed going to Cuba. That's fantastic. And I'll mention this before I even get started. Everybody can't go. Everybody doesn't want to go, but you can participate. And I want to commend this congregation for doing that, with not just me, but Brother Pate, others that you have participated with. That is fantastic, because you now are part of a history of the gospel of Christ being put around the world, and that is fantastic. But extraordinary things. I want to challenge you today to see if any of this is extraordinary or remarkable, or see something. You know, we talk about the providence of God. I haven't found anybody yet that's been able to explain all that, but we know we live it, and we find it happening. And so I want to challenge us a little bit to think about the remarkable things, because the road to Sierra Leone does not start in Sierra Leone. It doesn't even start in the United States of America. It starts in a little country in Eastern Europe called Moldova. And it really starts with a fellow named Sergei Korsamara that obeyed the gospel in Russia, and he was an atheist. So the road to Sierra Leone starts with an atheist when we talk about the Lord's church and the work of spreading the gospel in this town or in this country of Sierra Leone. Sergei, who has a PhD, obeyed the gospel, decided to come back to Moldova and teach. First person he taught was a lady that was injured, that was in a hospital, that was a friend of his. From that point forward, several people started going to Moldova. Several people have lived over there. Fortunately, for me, I was able to go a couple of times. The last time we went, we started having some Skype studies. John Smith, John Gentry, and I. And these studies were held on Tuesdays and Thursdays, basically. And it was a situation where one day we're teaching on Galatians, the first chapter, verses 6 through 10. Paul, there you might say, I'm amazed, or I just marvel that you are so soon basically left, or you're moving away to another gospel, which is not another but a perverted gospel, some that want to pervert this. And all of a sudden we hear this voice that's not like a Russian voice. It's a different type voice. And that voice says, would you come and teach this unperverted gospel to a country in Sierra Leone in West Africa? By the way, I'm looking for a guy named Dan Gentry. Well, John Gentry was on there. That's who he thought he had found. Dan Gentry was a fellow that had hid him during the Civil War that they had, and he had lost touch with him. But we said, sure, we'll come to Sri Lanka. That won't be a problem. Did you catch that? We didn't even know where Sierra Leone was, but we're going just as soon as we can get there. We said, sure, and he said, no, we're talking Sierra Leone. That's great. Where is Sierra Leone? So we had to kind of find this. And of course, sometimes with preachers, you have to think about, our minds is where can we go to teach, right? I mean, it's who's willing to, and when you got somebody that says, come over to Macedonia and help us, and immediately we sought to go to Macedonia. Come to Sierra Leone, Sri Lanka, wherever it's at, we're going. Boy, did we not know what we didn't know. And we learned in a year some things that pretty well shook us up. You see,
this series of Bible Skypes that we had with Moldova, we thought that would be good to do in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And so John Gentry says, since I can't go with you to Sierra Leone, I'll do the Bible Skype studies while you prepare to go over. And we would get on every now and then. There are about 40 in attendance in Freetown that attended these studies. And John Gentry had radio interviews and radio broadcasts in Freetown through Skype. It was a wonderful thing. People were listening, people were studying, and we have some pictures of them. They're very dark that I didn't bring, but they attended and they wanted to attend. So then we figured out where Sierra Leone was. And if you can't see it, I drew the arrow, which is much bigger than the country, but that's it up there. It's on the west coast. It's the deepest seaport on the west side of Africa. It was very valuable property in World War II, and we'll see that in just a second. We didn't know much about it. It's about 7 million people, and it was about 60% Muslim. It's about 30% of what they would refer to as Christianity or Christian, 10% other. English was the official language that they have there because it was an old British colony, slave colony, years and years ago. And the literacy rate was very, very, if you look at it, very high, what we consider. And you get all the numbers, and we looked at that. Maybe the one that stood out for us the most was when it says it was the 179th out of 188 developed countries in the world. This is going to be different for us, we thought. What does this mean to us? Because we had not been there. And so we started embarking on what we could find on the first trip. Interesting, we found two sources in the Indianapolis area that had Sierra Leone contacts. One was a lady by the name of Margot Kidder. She had been able to go to school at Howard University in Washington, D.C. She was working at Eli Lilly. She was willing to sit down with us and talk to us about the issues of Sierra Leone, and she says, first of all, I want you to know, do not talk to anybody else about any other country in Africa. Sierra Leone is its own little thing. Traditions, history, this. Okay, that was different because we've been talking to people about other parts of Africa. The second one was we met the husband and wife who headed up the Methodist missionary for 23 years in Freetown, Sierra Leone. We talked with them at length twice. We found out that they go over and they do hospitals, schools, things like this. They asked us what we were going to do. And we said, we're just going to go over to teach people about Christ. In fact of the matter, if you turn to John, the first chapter, I'll tell you exactly what John Smith and I quoted to them. What we quoted to them was the fact of where, verse 12, of John 1, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And we stated, we believe every man has the right to be born of God through Jesus Christ and the right to salvation. And that's what we're going to do, is just teach him about Christ from the Bible. The wife of the man put her hand over her mouth and she said, 23 years, we've never done that. That got our attention very strongly. The first trip we went was November 2 through 20 of 2009. Now you might say, why are you giving a history? Because many people have been to Sierra Leone. Some have been to Bow, some have been to McKinney's. But this takes you back to the history of what we have modern day. Because we couldn't find anybody that had been to Sierra Leone. And so we'll, as the story develops, you'll see that there had been, but they had not been from what we would consider to be the conservative brethren. My brother-in-law passed away during this time of a brain tumor, and we're standing there in line, or there are people in line, and I'm greeting them. And there is a preacher who's also an elder and another elder standing there in line. And they said, Steve, come here a minute, come in. They said, why are you going to Sierra Leone? I didn't think there were any Christians over there. Now, if you've traveled overseas, you get some statements like this and it kind of shocks you. But usually it's not from an elder or two elders and a preacher. But you're going for this particular reason. But we were at the hands of someone who had invited us, Joseph Ben-Gurion, who was not a Christian, who we had no idea who was, and we were putting our faith in him that we would be able to find a place to teach and do what we needed to do. Here's the five that started. Now, we had a lot of discussions about how we wanted to approach the work there because we were the first ones we thought that were going over there. So from your left, you'll see Jimmy Lee, Sid Latham, Phil Morgan, myself, and John Smith. It was decided Phil and Sid wanted to go to Bow, the second largest city, and start the work there. Knew nothing about anything there other than just go there and start. We decided we would go into the other three. We would go meet this Joseph Ben-Gurion. Know we would have to do a little bit of what Paul did in Acts 17th chapter and tolerate no telling what just to try to teach. Two different somewhat philosophies or approaches, but we had the same common goal, and that is we're going to spread the word of Christ. And so we traveled over together, and then we separated in a country that we knew nothing about. And the first thing we had to face was getting across a bay that was about 8 miles long. That was a situation of where those going to Freetown had to cross it. The ones going to Bow, we later found, could have gone around it. Here's Bow over to what would be your right, Freetown to your left. Here's some of the things to give you a picture of what we get in the country. And everybody that travels, I would say, wants to send pictures of what the country looks like. They want people to find out what they're dealing with. And so we titled some of these things. They're a little different than our stores, a little bit different than what we would look at. And it's a little bit different from a situation of where you look at these things and think, how do you get along in that? Well, we'll explain some of that. This was right outside of where we taught, by the way. The noisiest business in Freetown, Sierra Leone, is that place right there. If they're not playing some loud music, they're beating on a tire. We actually saw them try to beat a dent out of an old truck, and we're trying to teach over that. They're shopping and shipping. The shipping is a casket that you see there on the right-hand side. There's the way that goes there. Furniture stores kind of amazed us. They were just sitting out open. And if you want this couch, it comes in one color. That's kind of what we figured because they're all lined up out there. Different things that we saw. We saw all this before we got to teach. They wanted to show us their country or their town. Street vendors were there. The ladies were carrying the coal and some of the young fellows with coal on top of their head. We met money boys. We had to transfer some money. So we thought you go to a bank. Not necessarily right in 2009. You went downtown, you pulled up, and these money boys came, and they've got sacks of money, and you give them then, and you keep, the Americans kept their windows up and locked, and the Africans were in the front trying to do the deal. The money was worth nothing at that time. 100 U.S. dollars was worth 365,000 of their dollars. And so their money is basically nothing. You come home with it, it's only for souvenir. You don't bring it home to try to do anything with it. This caught our attention because our travel doctor told us several things, and he said it's not going to be appropriate for health. And sure enough, when you see a hospital and a mortuary that are the same business, you pretty well know you don't want to go to either one of them. We did find Omar Gaddafi's family built this mosque in Freetown, and it is the nicest building we've seen in Freetown. Telegraph Hill, and this will play a part, is where we went up. We had some television interviews and radio interviews, and we looked down, and this picture will play a part, especially tonight when we talk about a mudslide that was devastating to them. We ran across Muslim children that were coming home from school, and we had the greatest talk with them. Now remember, we haven't even started teaching, and we invited them to come to hear us teach. We didn't know where we were teaching. We knew the name of the place, Ebenezer Hall. That's what they told us. That's where we're going to teach. So we tell these children, I want you to remember, these are Muslim children. We're telling them Ebenezer Hall is where we're going to teach. There's a fishing port. They basically fish like they do the Sea of Galilee. They go out at night. They fish all night. They come back in. They actually have a breakfast with their fish in the morning there. You can see they have a great balance. They're hardworking people. They just don't have a lot of things. But ladies, I wanted to make sure I took a picture for my wife, in case she ever went with me, of the beauty salon over there. And this is where you would go and for that and alterations. I never did understand ladies that go get their hair fixed where they also have alterations. I just haven't gotten that yet. These are trash entrepreneurs. The question, and I give a quiz on this, can you see anybody among the trash? Well, there's two fellows there. We call them trash Nazis in Indianapolis area. My wife is one of those. I have carried many chairs home from other people's trash that she likes to repair. And here, I don't know, I was thinking, how do I get this on the plane coming back home? But this was a trash. Freetown Living, there was actually 12 people that lived in this little place right here. And that's kind of what it looks like in the town of Freetown. Freetown is the largest town. Some scaffolding, some things here. There's an anthill of Sierra Leone, the agriculture. And this is something that the Corps of Engineers, along with the British Army, they built this to get up to a mountain to take it away from the Germans. It still stands. It ought to be much better shape than this because it has a lot of history to it for the people in Sierra Leone. But let's get to the day we went to teach. It's a Sunday. The three of us, Jimmy and John and I, get up that morning about 4:30. We have our services. They're going to pick us up at 7 o'clock. They pick us up at 7 o'clock and they tell us we're going to go to a graduation. Graduation. You got to remember, we don't know that there's any other people there from a standpoint of the true Christians. We're going to go to their graduation. What's the graduation? It's John Gentry's International Skype School of Bible Studies. What? This is what they do. And all of a sudden, we're beginning to see they're very peculiar people, they're very superstitious people, but they're having a graduation because John Gentry's Skype studies are over with. We have now come. They've got their gowns. They're going to have diplomas. They're going to have all these things. They're going to have a parade. And those parade, here it's going down through, and we're kind of like, okay, we knew about we were going to have to tolerate the teach, but what are we really into now? What's this? Not often do you see a bunch of Christians parading down the street, right, with a band. And of course, these weren't Christians. But they were people who had been part of this study. There were about 40 graduates in this parade, and where they took us was to the largest Baptist church in Freetown. And we go in there, and about the time that the parade's there, and we're standing in the back like, what are we to do? And they say, by the way, you three are the keynote speakers to a graduation we didn't even know existed. And so we talked, and we evidently gave that group of people satisfaction because we were polite, kind, but firm. And we were not invited back to any more graduations. But the point being is, of these 40, we're going to find about half of them stood with us all the way through our studies, and some obeyed the gospel. The other 20, they felt just they couldn't handle it. When we got to Ebenezer Hall, we found a lot of these types seating there, just plain white seats. About 300 of these seats were set up. And they were waiting to be taught. Ebenezer Hall, we're thinking now, how does this get about? Joseph Bangura is a member of a Methodist / Wesleyan church. Ebenezer Hall is a break off of that. It just sits right next door to the Ebenezer Methodist Church. And it sits right on top of the Ebenezer Methodist Bar and Grill, which really got us going. This ought to be interesting. If I say the name Sandy Patty in the U.S., does that ring a bell with anybody? She's a gospel singer. She's won several Emmys. Well, we had to put up with the Sierra Leone Sandy Patty. We get there. We sit down. People have come in. And Acts 17 came to play. I don't know how many, if any, has ever been to Athens. But when you're in Athens, the marketplace is down here. You take a walk this way and then on up and over this way to Mars Hill. And there's idols that were sitting around there. And then on up. And what you've got is you've got Paul as he was talking about, "Brethren, I perceive that you are somewhat superstitious with all this." But instead of attacking every god, he says, "Let me tell you about the unknown God, the one there," which is an amazing part of teaching. What we decided to do was sit there and wait our turn and talk just about the God. Jimmy Lee, who had never been overseas, says, "Are we going to attack instruments today? What are we going to do?" "We're just going to talk about God. We're going to talk about God, and we're going to talk about Christ. That's all we're going to do. This will eventually take care of itself." Remember those Muslim children? Some of their mothers came to the teaching. Not only that, four of their mothers have now obeyed the gospel. It's an amazing thing, isn't it, what you can do sometimes through children? This is the faith healer. We were talking about God, and we were talking about things God does, and he raises his hand, and we always like to teach where you can ask questions. And he said, "I have raised the dead." And we said, "You have." And he said, "Yes, we have." So we took him over to Acts the 13th chapter. And we said, John Smith, who was on a cane right there, we asked him, said, "If you've raised the dead, could you heal him?" And he tried and he did many things and said, "No." So in Acts the 13th chapter, what we did is we got down into the fact, you'll see in verse 8, Elymas, the sorcerer, for so his name is translated, withstood them, seeking to turn the proconsul away from the faith. Then Saul, who is also called Paul, filled with the Holy Spirit, looked intently at him and said, "O full of all deceit and all fraud, you son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, you will not cease perverting the straight way of the Lord. And now indeed the hand of the Lord is upon you. You shall be blind, not seeing the sun for a time." And immediately a dark mist fell on him, and he went around seeking someone to lead him by the hand. We asked this gentleman, we said, "Do you believe we are the Elymas? Do you believe that?" And he said, "Yes." And we said, "Please then, we don't want to do anything against God. Strike us blind, strike us dead, do whatever." And he tried and he could not. He sat down and he sat that way for the next 4 hours. We said did not say another word. The reason we had to deal with this is because, you see, they will try to take over and they would get the audience all going with them. So we had to keep the audience with us, but you can't do that by really tearing into them. You have to treat them kindly. And so this is what we did. And he couldn't do it. And the audience recognized it. He sat down. And I don't know what kind of face that is, but that was his face for the next 4 hours. We brought lessons to bring change. Remember, we're in a strange place. We're in things we did not know. But we met the fellow on your left is a guy named John Cargbo. We called him John Kabul. The fellow on your right, his name, the only name we ever knew him by, was what he called himself, the Apostle Paul. But what we didn't understand was this John Cargbo was 35 years old. His wife had died a year and a half before we came. John Cargbo was a somewhat Pentecostal preacher, and he was listening intently. The Apostle Paul was just a typical one you would see that wanted attention for himself. This is Melvin Grayson Douglas. Why would I show Melvin Grayson Douglas? They are Joseph Ben-Gurion's children. You might remember Joseph is the reason we were invited over there. Before we were going to teach that day at what would be Joseph's Methodist Church, we decided that we were going to sit down. Anytime there's children around, a little bit about our history, Connie and I, as we ran a camp for 14 years, we absolutely love children. So I started, if I was asking questions, "Can you tell what I'm doing there?" And the rains came down and the floods came up. These three started listening. And then some more came in as they heard us singing. And then more. And there must have been a sale at the local whatever on these blue and yellow type material, because there's a lot of them that had those on. But they would come from around the neighborhood. They heard us singing. And that was even before we started services. But in 5 days of planting and watering, God does what only God can do. And that is that we get a call on a Saturday morning. We had been teaching Monday through Friday. The first Sunday we had been there was the Sunday of the graduation and these type things. And we had gone out to that Methodist church I just showed you. Now, this was what happened on Saturday. We got a call. "Can you come over?" We go over and we see this banner stretched all over a bus. A bus that seats about normally 15 people, but it's on wooded seats, but there's about 20 to 25 squished in there. And there's probably another 20 or so outside that bus. You can't see his face, you can tell his smile. This gentleman is Eric Conte. Eric Conte is an interesting fella. I will tell you about him as we go along. But there was female and there were male. And this brother here is Jeremy. And he's very explicit about it, Jeremy. And he's another interesting tale. But we needed a bigger bus. They wanted to be baptized. You cannot see him, but I've got a little red thing around. This is Samuel Kamara. Samuel Kamara is the first cousin of the vice president, which we were very fortunate to get into some of the vice president's family. But Samuel Kamara is one that we had been teaching, and he was a serviceman, and everybody knew Samuel. Samuel says, we need a bigger bus. I will get us a bigger bus. Can you see the word go and then ministry on the bus? Remember I said we were at a Methodist church? Samuel's going out and commandeering a Methodist church missionary bus. And there's people on this bus that are going to some type of social function. And Samuel yells out, you have to get off the bus. We're not anything social. We're going to go baptize. So people started filing off this bus one by one. And the people that were in those vans, they start getting in that bus one by one. We're thinking, this is weird. What will the brethren back home say when you tell them that you commandeered a Methodist bus to take people out to be baptized? It just doesn't work that way, does it? But we went out to a place 40 miles from Freetown. There was some concern. In Sierra Leone, Bow and McKinney and Freetown, these cities, even though they're in the same country, are somewhat different. Freetown is a combination of where many, many people come in. They think the fame and fortune's there to be a street vendor or something in Freetown. Crime is a lot more prevalent in that area. And so they took us out. When we got here, we were met by a gang. Samuel got out and said, I'll take care of this. Samuel's about 5'8", and Samuel talked to them, and that gang backed away, and we were able to get here. And here was the calm before the storm. They had to go across the rocks to check out to see how the water was. And it's interesting, they had a list of names and they were called one by one, but there needed to be a safer place. And so Jimmy was the one that was going to lead him to a safer place. But we were not going to baptize anyone, which got to be interesting because you didn't want white men baptizing and people being baptized just because of a white man over there. They sang as they went, and they sang, it was a glad day when I was born again. Everything's getting prepared now to place, and an obstacle appears, and then it was amazing to see how many of these folks that were going to be baptized try to move this fishing boat out of the way. Change was about to happen, and change is happening. And so, one after another, they were called and they were baptized. The folks doing the baptizing, I'll introduce you, and you won't remember these names, I'm sure, but the big fella here in the red in the middle is Jacob Cisse. We found out he was one of the mainstays of the World Bible School over there. The fellow that's doing the baptizing there is Joseph. And if you go back to this time when he was baptizing, Joseph, who thought he knew what to do, baptized in the name of the Father, name of the Son, name of the Holy Spirit, and the poor guy about drowned, he was baptizing. But we straightened that out. And then we weren't supposed to get in the water, but for a reason that I got in the water, I walked in the water, shoes and all, and tried to give some instructions to them. I told you about John Cargbo. John Cargbo is the reason I got in the water. John Cargbo and his wife used to go to this place and sit, but he's scared to death of water. He wanted to be baptized in our bathtub back in our motel. In the bathtub in our motel, John was about 6'2". There's no way he could fit. So we worked it out to get him baptized there. But this is the name of the place where he preached. He built this by his own hands. Light of the World, Christian Fellowship International, and Divine Light Center. Now we were talking in class about where he went to church. How would you like to tell people he went there? Number one, I don't think half of their members even knew the title of their church when we asked them about it. But we gave lessons on change, and John said, I've made a change. I'm no longer teaching a perverted gospel. We're no longer wearing a perverted name. Today we are Church of Christ in Wellington. You got to understand, we're at their liberty, right? We're teaching. You don't know what they're going to do. So he tells them to take down the perverted banner, and it comes down. And he says, the things we used to do, we'll do them no more. And they sung the song, I Surrender All. No instruments. I bring this fellow up because he's in charge of all the chaplains of the Sierra Leone Army, and we got to meet him. His name is Colonel Cargbo. Thank you very much. See, I told y'all you would wish that I'd go back to just a few minutes. This is Colonel Cargbo. He will play in a later trip very heavily. First trip, and I want you to notice the last line of this when we get to it. Freetown and Bo, the unperverted gospel was taught. Many doors were open among the Muslim, Catholics, and denominations. 34 baptized, and I can't tell you how much mixed emotion there was about these baptisms. There was accomplishments in two denominational congregations. We got an invitation to come back. But on the way home, all of us, the ones at Bow, the ones at Freetown, as we talked, we had a tough flight home. Who was going to nurture and teach and edify the 34 who were baptized? That's why the history has to be told. Who was going to do this? The second trip came a little later. It came about 6 months later. We got home and really did some research. And finally found, and down in Glasgow, Kentucky, that's where I was born, there was a preacher down there named Steve Higginbotham from the institutional side of the question. Contacted him. John Smith made some contacts. Mike Willis made some contacts. And we were able to find that there were at one time, years ago, some institutional parachurches. Parachurches are underneath a parachute, if you please. Sponsoring type churches. That they had started some congregations over there. And so that second trip, we were able to get into one of those. John and Mike did. And it was groundbreaking into the ones there in Freetown. They just had a couple of baptisms, two or three baptisms there. But the key was they were in this parachurch group. We had finally broken loose into that. In Acts the 13th chapter and verse 12, when we look down at this and he said, then the proconsul believed when he saw what had been done, being astonished at the teaching of the Lord. There were remarkable and astonishing things about how we even got to Sierra Leone. There's remarkable and astonishing things about the work that's going on in Freetown and in Bow. And what I want to encourage you to do is, I've just introduced it. Tonight, you will go through it. I have to tell you, I can't remember if I've been over there 9 times or 8 times. When you get old, you don't know. And so what I'm going to do tonight is I'm actually going through the rest of the story, which is even more remarkable than how we even just got over there. And how you became involved. And how more and more are becoming involved to do that. But here's what we talked. We talked about the plan of salvation, right? In class a little bit. This is one of the things that they had never heard of the group we talked about. This is one of the things that you look at and say, we teach it and we think about it, but this right here, hearing the Word of God, faith comes by hearing and believing in your heart. Believing what? That Christ is who Christ says He is, that God did send Him down for the purpose that God said He would send Him down. Repenting of your sins, turning away from those things that you've been doing to live for Christ. Meeting Him in the watery grave of baptism. Amazing things. We would think that doesn't work anymore in the United States, but it does. And I'll tell you about that in just 1 second as we close out. And then being faithful unto death. And that means no matter if you have to die for Him. That's the unperverted plan of salvation. One quick little story and then I'll close out. Would this work in America, what we tried to do over there, of just going and teaching and tolerating to teach? We have to make our mind up on that, don't you? But I will tell you about a story that's occurring right now that I'm able to live out, which I'm thankful for. In the city of Indianapolis, there were fellows years ago that you would recognize, if you remember the great fight in the institutional wars, of a guy named W.L. Toddy. You might remember a fellow by the name of Earl West. You might remember there was also a fellow by the name of Bobo, Brother Bobo. These fellows were instrumental in what was the institutional movement. The churches they preached at, Fountain Square, Garfield Heights, Franklin Road. Those churches still exist. People have tried for years to get in there. Last Sunday, I preached at Franklin Road. It was the eighth time I've preached there. They called, and they wanted to know if they could be helped, if any of the conservative brethren would be willing to come and help them understand the differences, that it's just been too long that there's been a separation. Kind of an amazing story, isn't it? But you know what happened? The amazing part about that story is it ties back to Sierra Leone, to a member of the Valtee Church of Christ that years ago he was a young man that sponsored Priscilla Street Church of Christ in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And that's how my name gets brought up. And that's an interesting story, because we never know when we make an inroad into a country, whether it's Sri Lanka, Cuba, we don't know what's going to happen, because when God decides for it to happen, it's stuff we can't explain. And it's an amazing feat. But I want to encourage you that if you're here and you have not obeyed this gospel plan of salvation, will you decide to follow Jesus today? If you have and you've not been walking as you should as a Christian, would you make the decision to come back and follow Him as you should follow Him? And we invite you all to come back tonight. But if you need to respond to the gospel call of Christ, please do so now while we stand and while we sing.
Who will follow Jesus?